Cause I got a woman way uptown, good to me. Yes, I have. Yes, I have. She says I'm loving her early in the morning. Yes, to me. Oh, yeah.
Welcome, welcome to the Pirate Monk Podcast. You are here again. You have found the spot. You are on the deck. You're on the train, on the love train. And I'm your host, David Mullen. Train. Well, the pirate train, anyway.
Okay, yeah. It's a mixed metaphor, but we'll go with it.
We'll go
it's
with
okay.
it. I mean, come on. I mean, really, anymore, you know. I am your host, David Mullen, and with me today is everybody's favorite pirate monk, Nate Larkin, and
hello,
at the
David.
Controls, as always, is our fearless engineer, Mondo. So, Nate, I know that we haven't been able to attend a lot of meetings locally here lately because we have so many things in the hopper, so to speak, so many things coming up, and I'd like to talk about a few of those. One of my favorite guys, Ken Chester, is running a little soiree, so to speak, a 48 hours in over in North Carolina in the mountains, I believe.
Well, this is one for the guys to put on their long-range calendar.
Right, because it's out in the fall, right?
Oh, yeah, and I don't know about you. My favorite of the four seasons would be?
Autumn.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And
absolutely.
In the fall, the one place I want to be is in the mountains.
Charleston, South Carolina.
Not Charleston. Charleston's on the water.
Oh,
I want to be up in the mountains. I want to be around
Asheville
Boone. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So how wonderful is it that Ken Chester and Scott Vosburgh and the pirate monks out there in western North Carolina mm-hmm. have scheduled a 48 hours of frankness mm-hmm. or 48 hours walking the path weekend.
Mm.
It's going to be the weekend of September 24th through 26th.
Okay.
Going to be held at the Valley Cruces Conference Center in Valley Cruces, North Carolina. That is going to be a fabulous weekend.
Now tell the listeners what Valley Cruces means.
That would be Latin for
Valley
of the Cross.
Of the Cross, Valley of the Cross. I mean, it's got to be killer, right? I mean,
yeah. So plan now. There'll be more details forthcoming. You'll be able to register from a link on the Samson site.
But something that's 48 hours that's more current that's coming up.
Just on the 16th of April.
Okay.
Barely 2 weeks from the moment we record this thing,
mm-hmm.
there will be a 48 hours of frankness in Minneapolis.
Oh, cool. What's the group there? Do you know?
I don't know. It's the Minneapolis Samson guys.
There you go. And
it's
on?
The Twin City Pirates. I don't know what it is, but
that's good. I like
yeah.
that.
Well, whoever they are.
Hey, I wonder if there's a group in Pittsburgh. Then they could be the Pittsburgh Pirates.
All right.
I like that.
And the
like
Tampa
that.
Group could be the Tampa Buccaneers. I mean, it could just
work. It would go on and on and on.
Anyway.
The Cavaliers and whatnot. And
there is still time for guys to register for that weekend up in Minneapolis.
Okay.
And it's springtime in Minneapolis. Nice time to go.
Yeah. Right now would be the time to go.
Go hang with some brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And make some progress on the path.
And here's the thing, right? I mean, that's making progress on the path. That's the thing. It's like a lot of people think it's the meetings. We keep trying to emphasize it's the relationships. So a lot of stuff is the stuff that happens after the meetings.
Yes.
And then really, if you want to really go there and really get that relationship, that outside of the Samson meeting relationship, as strong as it can be, you really do need to walk through the steps of the path at some point and sort of see it all come down. And one of the things that really, really moved me was the I don't even know what you called it, but it's like where you have the guys and they kind of sit around and they ask questions about a guy. A clearing committee.
A clearing committee. Oh, yeah. Baby, yeah. It's a vital part of the weekend.
Because it sort of gives you this sort of infrastructure, this sort of skeleton, if you will, to hang a system on that will allow you, when you just don't have the answers, which is so much of the time, you know what I mean? For me, anyway. It's so nice to know that there's this thing that is actually in place and has been thought out beforehand. But I don't think a lot of the SAMHSA guys know it, and you won't know it if you don't go to one of these 48 hours and see it sort of demonstrated. You might not even know what it means. But just having somebody ask you questions without really you having to explain it and them sort of just drawing out of you and you're just sort of thinking about it for the first time, those things are very powerful.
Yeah. Now, don't ruin the whole weekend for people.
Okay.
I mean, that's
okay.
Kind of a secret part of the weekend.
Okay, well, come on, man. I mean,
what a great tool that guys mm-hmm. pick up when they go. Hey, by the way, that same weekend, April 16th, mm-hmm. I'm going to be at Willow Creek Church in Orlando, Florida, okay. with my pastor, Scotty Smith.
Really?
We're both speaking there at the Grace and Men Conference.
Okay.
April 16th and, is it 15th and 16th, 16th and 17th, Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday of that
weekend.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, mm-hmm. Rob Brown and the guys who did the 48 Hours of Frankness retreat a couple of weekends ago.
Right.
Compared notes for that weekend. Sounds like they had a marvelous time. I wish I could have been there with them. One of the conclusions they reached was that if there's any weak spot in the typical Samson group, it's an absence of solid Silas relationships.
Right.
Not enough focus on the Silas relationship. Mm. Too much focus on the meeting itself.
Right.
So they actually put together a revision, a suggested revision of the Samson Society meeting format, mm. along with some supporting materials.
Okay.
And we have posted that on the Samson site.
Okay.
So just for informational purposes, those of you out there who are going to regular Samson meetings, you're not required, of course, to adopt any meeting format. We have a suggested format. We now have a revised suggested format. It's worth road testing it with your group.
Right.
If you haven't done it yet, go to the main page, top right, and download that revised meeting format.
That's right. You can get that there. Thank you so much, Rob Brown. And there are lots of other resources and just ways we can help you and ways to get involved. And it's a Ning site, and you can find community even there within the page itself. And that is SamsonSociety.org. And we'll be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Welcome back to SamsonSociety.org's Pirate Monk Podcast. I'm your host, David Mullen, along with Nate Larkin. And Nate, you got any letters?
Well, yeah, I got a few. Here's one. I'll read one this week. This came to me on the SamsonSociety.org website. Guy writes, "Hi, Nate. I've been a member of Samson for about a year now, and a member of SA for 27 months.
Wow.
During that time, there's been a lot of growth, self-discovery, and pain.
Mm.
My story is very similar to yours, except that I was not a pastor. I was a Sunday school teacher and a care group facilitator for my church, but I was also leading the double life of a sexaholic.
Mm.
I found myself at a crossroads again after another relapse last week. I now know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and I've picked up valuable tools on how to prevent it, but that didn't stop me from doing it anyway.
Mm.
The shame can be so unbearable sometimes. But I wanted to thank you for starting Samson and being inspired to write The Fact. I read The Fact at a meeting tonight, and it was just what my soul needed to hear.
Mm.
I do have a question for you, though. In your book, you mentioned having a few relapses yourself before obtaining long-term sexual sobriety. What was the turning point, Nate? I keep thinking that I've reached that turning point, but apparently I haven't yet. I know you're a very busy guy, but I'm hurting here, brother, and I need some help. Any advice you may have would be greatly appreciated. But finally, I want to thank you for doing the podcasts. I finally have high-speed internet and have joined the 21st century.
All right.
All right. So I did answer this brother's letter, and this is what I said to him. Brother, I'm not sure there is a turning point, a point of no return. Even after all these years, there's still this crazy voice in my head that gets louder whenever I'm tired or afraid or resentful or alone in a strange place. My inner addict hasn't given up.
Mm.
That's why I must be relentless in my honesty with brothers and my surrender to the power of the fellowship.
Mm.
It gets old sometimes. I would prefer to talk about my insanity in the past tense, as though it's something I've conquered. But I've learned through bitter experience that to do so is insane. I have not won the Masters. I do not get to wear the green jacket.
Mm.
But by God's grace, I do have the privilege of lending my spiritual, my strength and my weakness to my brothers every day. When I admit my vulnerability and seek shelter within the fellowship, I find safety and I make everybody else a little safer too.
Mm.
That's the counterintuitive part. In my weakness, I'm strong. It's my weakness that keeps me close to God and my brothers. I would prefer to glory in my strength, as Paul the Apostle would say, and to become God's sage. But I've found that Christ is magnified and my brothers are encouraged rather than intimidated by me when I choose to glory in my weakness and be a fool for Christ.
Mm.
So, my brother, embrace the relapse. Don't wallow in it. But thank God for the lesson in humility it provides.
Right.
Talk about it openly, learn from it, and move on.
That's right.
I'm convinced that if there is truly a turning point in recovery, it lies somewhere beyond the point where I stop believing that I've turned the corner or that there is a corner at all.
Mm. Yeah. And like we ask everybody, you know, whenever they have a relapse, it's like, What did you learn? You know, so it's all about that. It's like, but there is, the shame is debilitating, isn't it?
It really is. This toxic shame that forces us to hide our brokenness. There's some voice in my head that says I only get three strikes or one strike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up in churches that talked about the God of the second chance.
Right.
Jesus didn't talk about the God of the second chance.
No, he talked about the God of the
countless
70 times
chances.
Seven
That's
chances,
it.
Yeah, and I'm so glad he did. And I see this guy, you know, struggling with it, and because of where he said he came from, being a small group leader and a Sunday school teacher, that question that again and again comes up between you and I. Okay, I get all that. I'm with you 100%. What about holiness? You know,
yeah.
How do those two things work together? And we've talked about so many times the tension that those two
right.
things are held, grace and holiness, mercy and holiness.
Right.
And they kind of need each other. They're interdependent. They can't be separated one from another.
And we don't want grace ever to become an occasion for sin. I don't want to say I'm going to go, as Paul says, it
right.
would be crazy to say I'm going to do it so that grace may abound.
Grace may abound.
Yeah. No, the truth is that every relapse is a step backward. It causes pain to me and other people.
Right.
It's destructive to my soul. Mm-hmm. There's nothing good about it.
That's right.
But to lie about it, to hide it, if I can't be in a safe enough place to say where I am, if I've got to send somebody else to the meeting because it's not safe for the real me to go, then progress has truly stopped.
Mm.
I'm dead.
Yeah. And it strikes me, even as Rob was saying, like one of the things that he thinks has been neglected a lot is the Silas relationship, and this guy is saying there's so much shame, you know, involved in this. How much more so one of the neglected things that we have in our podcast and across the board in Samson is that there's a large group of women out there, and we've been trying to address that more and more. And if men feel shame.
Oh, these women, the ones I get letters from, so many of them just drowning in shame, feeling like such freaks that somehow they have fallen prey to this besetting sin that belongs to men.
Right. Somehow they've got an extra dose of the man gene or something.
Yeah.
And so therefore they are like out of control. And they're the only ones in the world that deal with this. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be interviewing a young lady named Crystal. And she is the founder of a ministry called DirtyGirlsMinistries.com. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Dirty Girls and Pirates on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
You may think you're all alone, and there's no way that anyone could know what you're going through. But if you only hear one thing, just understand that we are all the same, searching for.
And we're back at the Pirate Monk Podcast. Nate, we have a guest today, Crystal, that I'm really excited about, that you have known for a couple of years.
Yeah, she and I have corresponded a bit. I've heard great things about her ministry, and it's an honor to get a chance to finally speak with her. This is Crystal Renaud, who is the founder and director of Dirty Girls Ministries. Hi, Crystal.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing great. We're doing better than we deserve, as a matter of fact.
Now, you're up in Kansas City, right, Crystal?
That's correct.
And tell us a bit about yourself and about your story. How in the world did you wind up starting a ministry for the new porn addicts?
Well, you simply put, you know, I had a porn addiction myself, beginning at the age of 10 years old. I found a pornography magazine in my brother's bathroom, and at 10 years old, you know, I had, you know, no clue what sex was, let alone know what porn was, and at 10 years old, you're very curious. So I opened it up, and that was the first day of my addiction began. I was immediately hooked on this, you know, newfound experience. And for about 8 years of my life after that, so the age of 18, I was highly addicted to pornography, highly addicted to compulsive masturbation, highly addicted to phone sex and cyber sex, basically anything that could be sex without the actual physical act with another human being.
Wow.
And it wasn't until I was 18 years old that I actually met another woman who said, hey, I was addicted to this and we can help each other, that I first told somebody and was first able to find the beginning of freedom.
Mm.
And about 2 years ago, I started leading some support groups at my church. That was really unexpected in and of itself because, you know, I had my addiction. I had gone through the experience I had gone through, and I was like, hey, thanks, Jesus. You got me through that, you know. And I never thought that I would actually be the one to help other women through it. I was kind of okay with, you know, just having been through it, and now I'm living my life as a, graphic designer at my church, and no one even had to know that, you know. And about 2 years ago, I just kind of felt this feeling in my spirit that God was basically saying, Crystal, you have something really powerful that you've been through that you can actually help other women to overcome, like, just like you had, have someone help you overcome it. And I'm like, huh, well, that's interesting. So I decided to go to one of our counselors at my church, and these people that didn't know anything about my addiction, they knew me since I was a teenager, and they had no clue that I had gone through what I had gone through.
Yeah.
So basically I had to go to them and say, hey, I want to leave the support group. And they're like, well, hey, what do you know about this? I had to actually tell them. And I'm like, you know, actually, you know, 8 years of my life, this was my life. And they were incredibly gracious, and they allowed me that freedom to kind of run with it. It was the first women's group at my church for porn addiction, and it was amazing, but that wasn't enough. About a year later, about a year or so ago from now, I was at a bookstore kind of looking for other curriculum to use in my group because what I was using was getting kind of dry and it wasn't quite relevant. So what I was using was mainly for sex addiction among women. It really wasn't pinpointing pornography.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I was sitting there and I'm like, huh, there's something here, you know, and God's like, yeah, you're right. You got to write that book for me. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? And so, yeah, for the last year or so, I've been writing a book. But about 9 months ago, God said, you see the bigger picture, don't you? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I am. And he said, launch this ministry. You know, it's been an amazing whirlwind. But, about 9 months ago, I launched the new site, dirtygirlsministries.com. Have a forum on there and a blog on there. Women are able to engage in a conversation and find real hope and freedom through the other stories there, but ultimately hope and freedom through surrendering their addiction to Christ. So it's just been an amazing thing to see.
So at the beginning then, during this whole time, you were a church girl. Was that right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't really go to church until I was about 15. So for about age 10 to 5, I was really out of the church. My mom had gone through clinical depression and things like that, and my dad was a non-practicing Catholic man. So we kind of fell out of the Catholic church, and then my mom fell out of the church completely during her depression years, and so I really wasn't churched until we found a new church when I was 15.
So at 15, you're going to church, and for quite a while then, at least 3 or 4 years, you were still, in the middle of your struggle, but you were going to church and that sort of thing. So there are a lot of parents out there who think that their kids, they aren't seeing this stuff and they're not, you know, dealing with it because they're church kids, right?
Well, you know, I was leading the Christian club at my school. I was leading. I was a singer in high school, playing and leading in the student band. You know, all these different things, and kind of living this life of a fraud. You know, I believe that my faith was real. I did become a Christian at 16, but obviously I was living this double life. You know, I was living this public life where I was the good Christian girl. It had nothing about me that would have told you that I was having this immense addiction, yet in my private life, I was totally controlled by my addiction.
And that is just a miserable way to live, isn't it? I know it well.
Yes, absolutely.
So you you meet this lady, and you start getting help for yourself, and is that when you started blogging? Nathan told me you had a blog called Pink Hair Girls or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah. I launched my blog about 6 years ago, pinkhairgirl.net. You know, and I didn't begin blogging about my story till I think I looked it up. I think it was about 4 years ago. So I really kept it quiet. I kept it quiet for a very long time. Like I told you before, like, that was something that I got through. Thanks, Jesus. And I'm going to move on now, you know. And I really never felt like that was something that I was going to have to ever go into again. Eventually, you know, I kind of was watching this whole Triple X Church deal with all their blogs and stuff. I kind of, you know, reading about what they were doing there, and I was like, I wonder if I can write about that. I wonder if I can actually, you know, be that vulnerable and put it out there.
Right.
You know, and I did. About 4 years ago, I wrote a very brief, clean, pretty version of my story on my blog. And, you know, it got a lot of buzz. I got a lot of traffic was starting to come my way from that story. And I was like, well, that's interesting. I guess I'm not the only one after all, you know.
Mm.
You know, that was very interesting. And I didn't have any negative feedback from that. I had a lot of positive, even from them who were like, wow, I had no idea. And, and so since then, I've been able to kind of speak more and more about it. But obviously, when I began leading groups is when I had to be most public about it.
Now, we do know that the fastest demographic, the fastest group among porn users, fastest growing group, is female. We had a guest a couple of weeks ago who told us that among middle school students, it's his belief that porn use is almost equal between boys and girls in the coming generation. Rising generation. What's your sense? What kind of feedback are you getting? What kind of women are you hearing from? Did you feel like a freak in the beginning as the girl who's hooked on porn? And has that feeling changed?
Early on in my recovery, I definitely felt like the freak. I felt like the one that only woman, you know, that was struggling with this. Other than the other woman, you know, she and I were the only ones.
Yeah.
And definitely had the struggle with, you know, feeling like I was a lesbian because I just didn't understand why I was attracted to the pornography that I was attracted to. And so I rocked a long time on that line of freak or non-freak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I'm doing this ministry, though, I'm not naive to the fact that, you know, I'm not the only one anymore. And so when I get the emails daily from women from, you know, age 15 to age 55, you know, it's hard to really grasp what the main age is because it seems like it's just so widespread. But I absolutely know that this next generation of girls, and even just because of the culture they're living in, that is so saturated by sex and women being the ones who are the sexual aggressors, yeah, they're going to be exploring what sex is, and they're going to go online, and they're going to look it up. And so, yeah, they're going to be the ones that are using pornography online particularly more than someone of my generation or a generation before me. So I can see how that's definitely going to cause an influx in growth there.
Mm. It sort of becomes a normalized behavior after a while, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. Like, we know why guys do a lot of the stuff they do. I mean, there's a lot of people who just think that guys can't keep it in their pants, so to speak. You know what I mean? But then there's, you know, we have the reasons we do it. We everybody has different reasons for the compulsions that they mm-hmm. have and that sort of thing. But usually when we talk to women on the podcast here, I like to ask what you think in terms of, like, I have this ongoing argument with a friend of mine who says that women only get involved in this stuff if they've been sexually abused and so that they have some kind of abnormal, like, craving for sex. So is that in your experience true, or is it like... It's like, yeah, some people have, but some people are just, they just see it and they're hooked.
You know, I don't think you can put it in a box and say it's only because it's for sexual abuse women.
Yeah.
Because I was not sexually abused until after I was did porn.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I allowed myself to get into situations where older men could take advantage of me. You know, so it's, I was already addicted to porn. I was already sexually driven at that age, at that time. I think I was 15 or 16 when that really happened. But I'm finding women are addicted to intimacy. We are attracted by nature, by design, by God to be people of intimacy. We need it as a way to function almost. And so if a woman is in a household or a situation at a young age or even older, you know, where she's not getting her need for intimacy met, by God, she'll get it met however she can, you know. And for me, I did not grow up with a real emotionally attentive father.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know for me, I was lacking intimacy from him in a healthy way. And so when I found pornography, it began to fill kind of a strange void. I didn't really know that I had within me for that false sense of intimacy. And I think for women, you know, it could be porn or it can be cutting. It can be a eating disorder. You know, whatever they can do to fill this need to feel and to feel wanted and accepted and to feel intimacy. And so, yeah, I would not, again, I wouldn't put it in a box and say just for the sexually abused because I wasn't.
Right.
My friend who, you know, told me about her story, she wasn't abused until after she had already found pornography either. So, yeah, I don't think you can really say that.
Wow. And girls are doing all kinds of stuff that we've been looking for that link. I think you just provided it, you know, between cutting and eating disorders and people who abuse porn. And that it sort of seems, Nate, that what she was saying is like they just want to feel something. It's like they want to feel connected somehow so they and have control over something.
Yeah, I was speaking just last week with Constance Rhodes of Finding Balance, who's ministry is around eating disorders, primarily with women, although there is a small percentage of guys who go in that who get their needs met in that direction. And she's talking about a joint college tour that she'd love us to do, and
yeah.
She says that between us we address the top two issues on any campus,
right?
Porn addiction and eating disorders, and she says that they're both about intimacy.
Okay.
I'm still trying. You're helping me to understand it, Crystal. Thank you.
Yeah, Crystal, what's your sense of that? Like, you're saying, I kind of got what you were saying. How do you get intimacy needs met by not feeding or making yourself, you know, throw up and stuff like that?
Maybe, yeah.
Well, for women, they get a lot of attention for being thin. You know, and so if you're getting attention, it can be positive or negative. And even negative attention is positive to a woman who needs intimacy in her life.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. That's kind of simple, but I get it. Yeah.
And for you, I know that for me, my porn use, porn wound up taking me places I didn't intend to go.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to keep it just between my ears. It was just going to be a fantasy. I was never going to act it out.
Yeah.
But then the day arrived when I was, you know, acting out what I was seeing.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
You found that was your story, too?
It was my story. I truly believe that God protected me from myself in many ways with that. Like I told you before, you know, I had a real sexual confusion because I had pornography in my life from a very early age. So I didn't understand why I was attracted to female porn, lesbian porn. I was like, why am I attracted to that? And so for a long time, even into my late teens, I still struggled with that understanding. And so, you know, I had arranged for an anonymous encounter with a woman online, and I was going to try to feel this out and figure this out. And I had arranged for that to happen, and I've actually never told this publicly. It'll be in my book, but I've not actually shared this. But I went to the hotel, and I waited there. And I just sat there on the bed waiting for her to arrive. I mean, this is a woman I didn't know. This could have been some dude with the gun, you know?
Yeah.
And I just sat there, and I'm crying. I'm like, what am I doing? You know, I'm 18 years old. This is about 2 weeks before I met the woman who told me about her addiction. And I'm sitting there on the bed, and I'm thinking, what am I doing here? You know, how did I get to this point? You know, all I really wanted to do was look at that one magazine.
Yeah.
That one day, like 8 years ago, you know. And I was broken in that moment, you know. And I think for the first time, I heard God. You know, that first time you hear that voice, you know, is God, you know. And he said, well, Crystal, you know, has something so much better for you than what you're doing right now. I mean, it was as clear as I was having a conversation with him. And I don't want to sound all weird, but that's exactly what it felt like. And I said, well, okay, you know, if you're there, if you're really going to help me with this, make this person leave. And during all this time, the door's knocking because she's there. And I'm waiting, and all I had to do was open the door, and it would have been over. You know, whatever was going to happen was going to happen. But about 10 seconds later, you know, she left, and the door stopped knocking, and I threw up. You know, I literally was at my most broken moment. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks later, I met the woman who essentially pulled me out of the mire. So, yeah, I mean, I never would have thought that I'd be in that kind of situation. And that's just, you know, one of them. But that was probably the darkest and deepest one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, for you, the road out has involved company, somebody to share your life with, somebody to tell your story to.
Right.
And that certainly is my story as well. Are you finding that through the forums and the blog comments at dirtygirlsministries.com, women are able to make mutually helpful connections?
It seems to be. The forums are new. Obviously, the whole site as a resource is new, because when I launched it, it was strictly for a book survey information. So about 9 months ago, we changed it up a bit. The forum's only been open probably 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm seeing it, that kind of pattern in their comments, saying, you know, I'm so glad to have this place. I'm so glad to have women to talk to who understand and won't judge me. You know, women who I can share my struggle with and share my story with and hear my story from, you know, because they're hearing the same things. So it's been pretty remarkable to see that happening there. And so, yeah, absolutely. I think that I'm monitoring it pretty well, pretty strongly right now, because there's always somebody that could, you know, be on there with the wrong intentions. And so I'm trying to be very careful with, you know, with what's being said. But I haven't actually run into anything like that yet. I'm very glad about that. And so, there definitely seems to be a safe place for women to come and to gather and to just talk and understand one another.
Yeah, and this place that you're talking about is dirtygirlsministries.com, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so can you just sort of like in a thumbnail sketch, in a nutshell, tell us what's going on there? Just we have a lot of girls who listen and women who listen to the podcast, which has been an odd thing for us, but like very enjoyable.
A pleasant surprise. Yeah.
And you know, just what they can expect in terms of help and resources and that sort of thing.
Right. I mean, the site's pretty bare right now. It's a bare minimum of what we'd like it to be. But we're a startup ministry, you know, so we don't have the funding to make it, you know, bigger or better. But if you go there, basically you'll get the intro information about who we are, and you'll get a better understanding of what we are and why we are who we are. And you can click on the blog, which is stuff that I write. We also have some guest authors there that will write different articles on sexual abuse, even something that I'm not real familiar with, but women who have written who are kind of helps in that way, and also just general posts about addiction, like I would have on Pink Hair Girl, you know, in the old days. And we have the forum. All you have to do is click on forum, and I'll take you to a forum. It's essentially a message board, and there's just topics. You can submit a prayer request. You can tell your story I call it a confessional. But also a general discussion area. People are just bringing up, you know, what's working, what's not working for them. One came up last night, or it was Saturday night, or right before Easter, which was appropriate. And she just said, you know, I'm broken. I just acted out again. And immediately there's a woman who responded to her saying, you're not alone. And so that's what it's about. You know, it's about women helping each other to understand that this addiction is widespread and that we're here to help each other.
Mm.
Basically, you can post whatever you want to post. I mean, they're not a free-for-all, obviously, but you can, if you have something on your heart, then definitely share it, and you'll have a woman there who's there to pray with you and pray for you and who will encourage you. And I think that's something that's lacking in the church. You know, the church is too afraid to provide that for women right now, and I think the church is doing a disservice to women in that respect. But and there's also just a resource page. You can find links to accountability softwares and workbooks and different podcasts I've talked on or different messages I've given, and different ministry resources that may be of help to you that you may not know how to find them otherwise. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for what you're doing, Crystal. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person the next time we get to Kansas City.
Yeah, I just want to commend you for your bravery. This year, you're a brave girl.
Thank you.
To our listeners,
right?
If you can't remember the URL to Dirty Girls.
Dirty Girls Ministries.
Ministries, yeah. It's kind of tricky.
It's tricky, and if you put the wrong thing in, you're going to trigger your report to your accountability partner.
Yeah, that's right. you can find a link to Crystal's site on the main page, on the pub page at SamsonSociety.org, bottom right. And this is for the women only. Guys, you don't need to be checking it out.
That's right.
But this is for the women.
That's right. We'll be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
No day in my life has passed that hasn't proved me guilty. Prayers are uttered too fast from a heart that's cold and empty. Oh, blessed Jesus, may we find covered in thy wounds, though our sins they rise to meet us, how they fall next to the merits of you. All in me calls for this, it calls for my rejection. This heavy unrighteousness, well, is there no protection? My best services are rights, my best deeds are filthy. Oh, blessed Jesus, thy willing choice to make my heart soften. Keep the broken hearted sure, clinging to thy cross, our cure.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast, Nate. Crystal Renaud is a brave, brave young lady, I think.
She is, and it's a privilege to know her and to support her ministry. I, I hope this, that the Samson community will get behind this new ministry and see what we can do to strengthen it.
I was there the whole time just going, oh, man, there's so much synergy there. I can really tell. Like, if it would be great for them to have sort of their own kind of fellowship thing and, like, just need somebody with enough gumption to get it going like that. And it seems like she's got a lot of people who are already hitting her website pretty hard. And, of course, she's writing this book, which I think will be just a very useful tool to a lot of people. And I think she said that's about a year away, just because of, you know, how publishing goes and its slow schedule.
The wheels of publishing grind slowly.
Yeah. There's some proverb there, I know.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole idea of a Ning site for them, you know, and which is a community site like Facebook, well, like we have for SamsonSociety.org.
Yeah.
And where you can, like, actually interact with people and have people in your groups and that sort of thing. It would be a great idea for them, and I think I can just see a lot of possibilities of us working together, you know.
Yeah. That's good.
So you are off to make another trip, and one more time, you said in Orlando you're going to be at the...
Yep, going to be at Willow Creek Church, a PCA church in Orlando. The weekend of April 16th.
Weekend of April 16th.
At the Grace and Men Conference. Great conference put together by Harvey Kilpatrick.
Okay. And so we're hoping that you guys down in Florida, that you'll all be like sliding down there for this conference and come to see Nate speak down there. And we'll hope to see you next time here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
I'll be your dirty girl.
I like it when we get...